Good Erev Shabbos to everyone. We're going to have a quick Parsha recap of Matos and Maaseh. So Parsha's Matos begins with the halachas of making a nether or shvua. So although translated as vow or oath, there's no real English equivalent to nether. Now when one makes a nether, he prohibits himself from doing something or eating something that's permitted. Just a few of the many halachas of nether: a nether made by a woman living alone takes effect immediately, whereas a nether made by a girl living in her parents' house or a married woman can only take effect if her husband or father agrees to it. And a nether is very stringent because a person can actually get flogged. He can get malchus if he doesn't keep his nether. Next, the Bnei Yisrael commanded to wage war with Midian as vengeance and punishment for enticing them to sin. 12,000 men went out to fight, 1,000 from each shevet. They killed all the kings of Midian and Balaam as well. They brought back the captives, women and children, and many spoils too. So Moshe got upset that the women were brought back, for these were the very women that they hadn't sinned with. All women that were even of age to be with a man were subsequently killed, and all the spoils were to be divided. Now before the division, Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Bnei Yisrael the relevant halachas of Hagala and Libun, namely how to kasher vessels that are obtained from a non-Jew. So all the spoils were to be divided in half, half to the soldiers and half to the people. Each group had to give a meches, a tax or a gift of what they received, which was to be one item of every 50. So for example, half the cattle amounted to 36,000, which means that 72 had to be given over. The meches of the army was given to Elazar Kain, and the meches of the people was given to the Levim. Now after this division, the army officers approached Moshe Rabbeinu with the good news that not a single soldier was killed, and with an atonement gift of gold vessels, bracelets, rings, and other ornaments totaling 16,750 gold shekels. Now Shevet Gad and Reuven had an incredible amount of livestock and approached Moshe with the suggestion that they stay on this side of the Jordan, as it was great and expansive and full of pasture. Now this was problematic because if they didn't cross into Eretz Yisrael with everyone, they would instill fear in the hearts of the rest of the Bnei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu gave them some pretty solid mussar for even making this suggestion. They countered that they would only build pens for the livestock and fortified cities for their children, and then not only would they join the Bnei Yisrael in the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, they would also lead at the head of the troops and not return until everyone received their portions. Moshe agreed to this condition of theirs and reiterated it a number of times so that there was no confusion. Now Parshas Maaseh begins with summarizing the entire route the Bnei Yisrael traveled from Mitzrayim all the way to where they were currently situated in the plains of Moav. Rashi points out that although it seems to be quite a lot of journeying, 42 places spanning 40 years, and therefore seemingly the Bnei Yisrael didn't get much rest, actually throughout 38 years they only journeyed 20 times, because other travels were either in the first year after Yetzias Mitzrayim or the last year before entering Eretz Yisrael. Next, the Parsha delineates the precise borders of Eretz Yisrael, and next the leaders of each shevet were named. These would be the representatives of each shevet to help receive and apportion the land for them. Now Shevet Levi didn't receive a portion in Eretz Yisrael like everyone else, so the Shvatim were commanded to give the Levim some of their cities. Not only did they receive the city, but also 2,000 Amah area surrounding it. Next, we learn about the Ari Miklat, cities of refuge. So if someone killed B'Shaigig inadvertently, he is now in danger of being killed by the Goyal Hadam, the Redeemer of Blood. This is the way the Torah refers to a relative of the murdered. He's actually allowed to avenge the blood of his relative by killing the murderer. Now the murderer is allowed to run to an Ir Miklat, a city designed for such, and there he's going to be safe. If he steps out, he risks his life. He's only allowed to leave the Ir Miklat once the Kohen Gadol dies. Now this quote-unquote home base or safe zone is only for an inadvertent murder, not a planned, premeditated one. And the Parsha concludes with the sequel, if you will, of the Bnei Slavchad. Remember in Parshas Pinchas, we learned that there was a man named Slavchad that had 5 daughters and no sons. They came to Moshe Rabbeinu and asked him why is it fair that just because their father died, they should lose out and not receive his portion in Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe was then commanded by Hashem to give them their father's portion. But now in this Parsha, the elders of Shevet Menashe came along with a very valid concern. These women will get married to men from other Shvatim, have children, and when they die, their portion will be transferred to the Shevet of their husband, effectively transferring this portion of Eretz Yisrael from one Shevet to another, and we know that each portion must remain within the Shevet. So Moshe Rabbeinu then taught that although a woman does inherit her father if there are no sons, she's limited to marrying only someone from within her Shevet and may not marry out of the Shevet. No worries about a Shidduch crisis here, because the Pasuk says that indeed the daughters of Slavchad married their cousins. All's well that ends well. Chazak chazak v'nischazik. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.